This is Robert Stark. I am joined here with Pillator. Pillator, it's a great having you back on the show.
Hi, Robert. Thanks for having me on.
And I'm also joined here with Sam Kevorkian and JJ Michael.
Hello.
What's up?
So to start things off, you posted this article introducing the alt-left. Have you pretty much identified more with the alt-left? For quite some time, I know since the beginning you were on the show. Would you say you're at the point where you're more... Would you go as far as to say disown the alt-right?
Yes. You know, I always was alt-left, and it's an interesting thing. A lot of things have happened, clearly just a year. I did my senior project on the alt-right, and I pretty much invested my time into it and what was happening with it. And the first time I came on your show, I was talking about a brief note about what I thought the alt-left was, and I promised in the future to write more about what I thought about what alt-right or alt-left should be. And I think we are now entering a period where the alt-left is becoming more legitimate. But however, most normies don't understand it, because it's just, well, if there's alt-right, there's obviously alt-left, and alt-left pretty means Antifa and normies who are on Black Lives Matter and Soros-funded parties. But that's not exactly it, as I think...
So you're more kind of getting towards the original alt-left. Originally, it was called the left wing of the alt-right, the kind of scene that Brandon Adamson was involved with.
Exactly. And he's pretty much the OG of this. And only The Week has referenced him as the originator of the alt-left. And I pay all respects to that. It isn't some kooky alt-left watch website or some, radical pink-haired tranny people. No, it's nothing like that at all. It's something that should be more transcendental and I guess more what left-wing ideologies should be for a voluntary and common person. But I guess people don't care about that. But again, you know, with the avant-garde power of the alt-right and what we've been seeing in only just a year, when Hillary Clinton had her speech about the alt-right and how normies got all crazy about it, we now see that the alt-right is now just becoming the new Nazi, and it's losing. And as much as, you know, they would like to call it identitarianism is just intersectional right-wing stuff, and it's becoming as like intersectional feminism. And there needs to be a redo or a restart, and we have to start from scratch, and it can't be all these traditions, what we know as the left. Like, we think of all the isms, like feminism and whateverism and like black people or something like that. It has to be a period or something after postmodernism and liberalism and multiculturalism. And I think that's it's a good time now. And I think what I've been doing, what I've wrote on my website about introducing the alt-left, was pretty much my ideals I originally had. But after some more experience in the past craziness I've experienced in a year, I think it's time that, you know, my own movement, Asian Aryanism, which I've developed words for, I think the alt-left is going to be something really precious and something new that's going to happen. And and right now the alt-right is normie shit. It's like Tumblr chick, pretty much. Everybody wants to be alt-right. Everybody wants to be red pill. It's what girls do to get alpha alt-right chads, right? To be that like non-normie stuff, we have to practice and make things that matter for the future, not like get into this hipster stuff right now. And I think it's time to have a movement that is more open-minded to things like Asian Aryanism, pretty much.
Well, isn't Asian Aryanism a form of identitarianism? So you're not saying identitarianism is a positive thing if it's put towards something positive, like you're going back to the fundamental principles that you talk about of friends, family, and freedom. You're just talking more about identity politics as these kind of online political movements.
Well, you know, I'm not so sure if identitarianism would be open-minded about biracial or multicultural people.
Well, identitarianism doesn't have to be explicitly one thing. Identitarianism opens up, it basically means having a group collective identity and sort of basing your agenda on that identity, but it can be a lot of different things.
Exactly, and I hold it on to identitarianism thinking it would be some form of Asian-Aryanism, but if identitarianism is just going to be a banner for RP 17 to 28 year olds who think that it's cool to be a Nazi, or they think they're protagonists to an anime nobody's watching, then obviously we can't have nice things and we can't have Asian-Aryanism. And so, you know, identitarianism, we had that one gay looking kid, what's his, Peter, with the unpronounceable last name Sergejevicawaka, who was on the he basically was screaming and wearing his identitarian t-shirt, and everybody sent him death threats. And, you know, he just said, I'm just the guy that wants to be an identitarian, but I work at the vet. You know, you entrust this guy that who's going to be the a normal dude, but he likes like white nationalist stuff. And so, you know, identitarianism, we have to make sure that it's not this reserved sweppel thing, but it kind of is. And so, you know, if identitarianism was really to reach out, then it would accept something like Asian-Aryanism or mulatto futurism or some bicultural multicultural thing. But this is where the alt-left comes in, because I think the alt-left is definitely, it's not that it promotes non-white parties, but it's this ideal where it's about having, you know, who you want to associate, who you want to be with. And it's not transhumanism at all either, as that's a little different. I think it's more starting about, as I put it, friends, family, freedom, or this ideal that it's getting rid of these definitions, what we think the left as, these like pathetic fat Antifa punkster people, and reinventing it to make it a voluntary Buddhist religion, and more like this kind of thing that's at peace with the right. And it's not a spiritual war like Julius Evola says about light hand, dark hand path, but more that's something that everyone can get along and kind of just have their own ideological thing, but not as like not too radical, you know. And I think it's the perfect of being queer and anti-normie and avant-garde all at the same time.
So you're kind of talking more about that, yeah, that original kind of left-wing faction of the alt-right, and I noticed, let's go over these points, friends, family, freedom. Let's start out with freedom. On the Antifa left, obviously, they're pretty much against freedom of association. They're in favor of censorship, getting people fired from their jobs, and shutting down dissenting views, so they're probably the worst. But on the alt-right, obviously, I mean, they're not doing stuff like the Antifa are, but I do think people in the alt-right are very rigid. Like, if you disagree with them, like, oh, you're a queer or you're a Jew, and there is this kind of, it's not as bad as the Antifa, but it's this mentality, if you disagree with them and you don't fit into this narrow way of thinking, they kind of, the whole alt-right thing scene becomes like an echo chamber. So freedom, do you mean just kind of freedom of expression, freedom of speech? Because freedom can sometimes be a very kind of vague, simplistic term.
I think it's more like freedom as the desire, as a smart Western human being or some enlightened character that desires more than just being, having the, you know, there's the boundaries of human nature. Now, that does sound like transhumanist, but in no way I support transhumanism, because I find that the transhuman in nature is pretty much its own thing. I feel that people have freedom where I'm not going to go to school today, or I'm not going to go to work today, or something like they want to do something, but something is, and people, the whole Anglo-Saxon capitalist thing was basically for us to support, you know, advocate freedom as long as we can produce, you know, the means and capital to have that. And that's the good nature of capitalism. But then there's these loony Antifa anarchist type that think that just dropping out and doing drugs and being bums, kind of like what Harlan Venison does, is somehow productive. That's basically a wrong thing. When I was 15, I read these whole anarchist literatures from Crime Think, and they basically would argue for this, that you're only free when you run away from home and dumpster dive and don't take showers. And it's again, this is a radical, silly thing that's not taking care of
that's totally idiotic. I totally agree with you. But freedom is the absence of oppression, forces that are preventing you from doing what you want. So basically, getting back to the definition, freedom from what? What is preventing you to live your life as you see fit?
Well, I think what's really preventing people is, again, you could say this silly left wing slang of just what capitalism and institutions and culture. That's what they say. They think everything's a social construction, but it's kind of libertarian. Libertarianism pretty much argues. I could just say that the alt left is just a variant of libertarianism, but again, libertarian is its own thing. I think it's really important to reconstruct the whole left wing spectrum and stripping down why this stuff happened. Like if you're a reactionary, you really think what really happened was the French Revolution that really created this divide. Whether you want to call that a virus or just a misunderstanding, I think it was a mistake. I think it was, and again, communism, you know, goes against human nature, as that's a radical extent. And so everyone, the liberal enlightenment, all agrees that people are better off being educated, and this is a silly Western tradition which hasn't been really explained and really assumes everything's ideological and not practical. And it's unfortunate because it has created a further divide, is making now the right the white people party and the left the non-white transhumanist party, which is unfortunate. But freedom is basically what you want to do. If you want to go discriminate and be with people like yourself, go ahead. If you want to go do this, you should. It's a very libertarian nature, and that's really all I mean about. It doesn't mean cut your dick off and be some tranny person, whatever. You could do that. I'm sure of it, but it's not this excessive nihilism. It's not this decadent. It's goodwill freedom, or it's at least and if you want to be decadent nihilist, we're making sure that the alt left is against nihilism too. So,
what do you think about that quote that Brandon Adamson always brings up, that freedom is not just being able to do what you want, but to live in the kind of society that you envision, ideally?
I think we're in a really strange period right now where people have the internet and people have Discord, where we can go to these cyberpunk cities on Discord and go into chat rooms and create little forums. I mean, there's threads on B-chan, right, or 4chan, right? You have like the mech forum and the B4 and R9K and Wizards, and people get in their own room. I mean, we have like, you know, Chads and Stacey's, and people think that's life, you know. And I think the alt-right has fallen for that trench, you know. They're everyone's living their anime right now, and there's media. The media is no longer the centralized put on the TV. It's what we prefer to consume, like DJs who pick records. That's our media, and it's creating more divided people. And I think America is becoming more like China in design, because it's becoming so too many people and too many towers and not about the natural world. And again, I think that's why the alt-left would be for friends and family, is because a family is what makes us, you know, enjoy life. It's a traditional thing. It's part of the natural order of the world. And friends is who we meet, and all these unique friends we have, and we have the freedom to do and develop as a person. And it's not decadent. It's a healthy thing. It's not this thing that goes against human nature, as I think the alt-left is about having important human nature. You could say race, realist values, whatever you want to put it. But it's making sure none of the kooky alt-left theories of social construction or ideological rhetoric, creative writing gets through. So
I've always been, well, for the past few years, I've been very critical of the alt-right. I've really moved away from identity politics. I'm much more skeptical of it now. But the Unite the Right thing, what really set me off about it, what bothered me about Unite the Right was it just seems like it's going to be used now as a clampdown on people on all sides of the political spectrum. We're already seeing the Washington Post come out against Antifa now. They just released an article about the Berkeley incident that just happened. And you know, I just feel like the feds are going to go after both sides in this.
You predicted that in the previous show, that it would be an excuse for basically a massive crackdown, you think, on both the alt-right and the far-left?
Yes, yeah.
Is your denunciation of the alt-right, is that in response to the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville?
Absolutely. I was at Unite the Right with a couple of friends, and what happened was I thought this would be a positive thing, but I clearly saw all the negatives happening, especially when I went up to Lee Park, and the first thing I saw were the Daily Stormer idiots telling about Gas the Kikes, Adolf Hitler was right, and white, and something, all this crazy stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, how could Richard Spencer and the Identitarians associate with this? I guess this is the folly of intersectionalism. They think this is somehow, it's like the communists who basically, the anarchists that are about love and freedom, and then they add the Stalinist in. And I think that's exactly what, you know, they add the Nazis in. But it was an unfortunate, sad day because the cops broke it up and we went back to McIntyre Park. And I just saw gloom and doom in the air as two of the guys of Identity Europa and American Vanguard were fist fighting because they're both blaming who invited the Nazis to ruin everything. And then now there's this kooky conspiracy theory out there saying that some, you know, Zog or Jews or some kind of state wants to stop them. And now the alt-right's going to become like the Turner Diaries and start going underground and, I guess, bombing, making them exactly the enemies they're trying to move away from. And it's even hilarious as I went on my Discord server the day that happened, on one alt-right Discord server, to hear everyone's action. All I heard was a bunch of fucking nutty white nationalists telling how much it was victory, when slowly a week later, everyone was getting kicked off the internet, or, you know, baked Alaska with acid in his eyes, and Chris Cantwell going, you know, putting himself to jail, and media shutdowns at all sites. And you're telling me this is victory? It seems like it's defeat. They're sore losers. And so, I mean, I did meet a lot of cool people. You know, I did meet, you know, like Andy Nowicki and Augustus Sol Invictus and some of the cool bodyguards of Baked Alaska and other people I can't think of right now. But it was fun, but it was completely gloom and doom. There was defeat in the air, and it made me feel weird that at 3 o'clock watching Donald Trump talk about the event, knowing that something was indeed wrong. And I wish Spencer would address the issue about Nazis in there, but he's so obsessed with the law about how they broke a contract, rather than, I think it's because the Nazis were advocating violence and that's why the cops broke it up, attitude, and not getting their shit together. But the alt-right has moved away officially from the alt-right institution, identitarianism, or the cool countercurrents background, and now has become the new Nazi, the new National Socialist. Normies go crazy. They're trying to make sure that it's not happening. And I really can't say much on that, that it's really hard to defend the alt-right when nothing's being produced but 19-year-olds who think they're protagonists to an anime nobody's watching, and a bunch of girls who go on Tumblr or whatever site they use, and they're trying to pick up men by saying they're red-pilled. It's becoming normie, and so I have to denounce it. It's just, I will hang out with my cool, weird, queer, white nationalist, gay white nationalist friends and other fun right-wing people, but if I meet a type of open Nazi person or some dumb girl who thinks she's 1488, then I'm going to cut the friendship because they're basically hipsters. They're basically these whores, and I think there's problems with that. It's really has became chatty and normy, I would say.
Can I add a comment in there, since you mentioned the whole intersectionality thing with Spencer? It's interesting, if you look into Spencer's history, he wrote a one of his grad student paper on Adorno, and then his mentor, Paul Gottfried, was a student of Marcuse. So there's a lot of Frankfurt School influence on the original alt-right that Spencer formed. It's kind of interesting in that way.
Oh, yeah. I said before to my Marxist professor at college, I told him that, look, I think the alt-right is fourth-wave deconstruction in some strange respect. Now, they will disagree with that because they think deconstruction is a completely reserved for the left-wing, and they're there to deconstruct anything that's evilly right-wing. No one has ever thought that you could deconstruct deconstruction people, but it's true. And I think the alt-right is an embodiment of deconstructing deconstructing peoples. And I think that's totally right to say that Paul Gottfried and some, it was just natural that, I mean, again, people like, I guess you could say Nick Land and the neo-reactionary thing after Deleuze was pretty much just a stepped into science fiction and creative writing and more onto the alt-right side of things. And it's ultimately all this was, you know, a natural thing with all these kooky academics going about. But that is very interesting. And and by the way, I do believe Jason Giorgiani has also denounced being on the alt-right as well. And I think there's good reasons why he doesn't want to be on the alt-right. And I think he's very intellectual to say that, because itself has became an altright.com business led by Daniel Freiberg. And so it's going to be very hard to take the brand or take it into and where it's going to go, right? And it's becoming less. But the point is that there is some reaction against liberalism, multiculturalism, the postmodern world, and we should continue that effort. And I think the alt-left and Asianarianism are perfect surrogates and preparations for that ethno-nationalist future.
So would you say your vision of an alt-left basically opposes all the stuff they oppose to, like political correctness, globalism, mass immigration, all that stuff?
Of course. The globalists are the enemies, and the whole...
Oh, yes, of course.
In Alex Jones fashion, the globalists are the enemies. The people who are on the top of elitist positions, who live their nihilist life, are the enemy because they don't have any proper understanding of civilization. And it's this ideal of going forward and transhumanism that kind of perverts people. You know, it's this consumerism, this cash grab. It's not about the health of people. It's this technology grows, but people suffer under consequence, but cultural trends are moving. And the whole dead Kennedys, fuck off Nazi punks, that's dying. That's that whole paradigm, that's dying. The whole political correct paradigm, the whole 1990s of just being PC, MLK, Martin Luther, that's going to go. That's going to go in the trash bin, like Karl Popper would say. That's all going away, and movements like this and everything, we're just a part of that, and the internet's going to change and recorrect people's stance. The only thing is, I hope the alt-right doesn't become politically correct, and that's the new political correctness, and basically, as I said, I hope that it doesn't reverse tables, and we'll see a new National Socialist Parties, and the new normies are Nazis, and the new left-wing becomes this convoluted, you know, like it happens all over again. But I'm pretty sure that won't happen. I'm pretty much a Asian studies guy, and I think everything is generational and Confucius or Taoist or Shinto. So I have more investment in that than other progressive Western philosophy. I think more things are natural and Asian-like. So
as far as identity comes in, you have the alt-right, which is focused on white identity, and you have the kind of civic nationalist view, which I guess you could say is alt-white. And you just have your generic conservative who says, "Just we're just individuals, or it's all about America." And then you have the Antifa side, which is anti-white. Would you say your version of the alt-left, is it based? I mean, obviously you have your Asianarianism, but does white identity or white identitarianism, is that a factor of the alt-left as you would describe it?
Of course, because there can be white preservation in the alt-left, because remember, classical leftism is basically for the people, you know, is for, you know, like people like Huey Long, you know, it's this ideal of being civic, and that having, you know, you prefer to be the freedom with white people interest, right? And, you know, back then, if you had a white Republican or white Democrat, and they're both white people, whites kind of gravitated to white Democrats because they had the freedom to be more sweppel than white people, like, you know, it wasn't non-white, you know, and that's why I think there was this growing hatred for the Republicans years back, was because there's nothing to lose because they're both white parties. They never put non-whites in the equation. And now, obviously, white people are voting for Trump because that's the only white people party left, and the Democrats are all non-whites. But, of course, I think white people can still preserve, and European culture can be still preserved in their own thing. There always will be nationalism. There always will be racial consciousness, and there always will be the interest of Western civilization, just like North Korea and crazy Korean people looking to rule the world and bomb everyone. There'll still be white people who prefer to unapologetically prefer to have a blonde wife and macho blonde man and do Greek role playing, whatever. I think that's will be its own little faction. I think the alt left can help out is just by making, again, talking. They can accommodate their own interest in friends, family, freedom in their own way. But again, I'm not going to speak for the white interest party because, again, I don't think of myself as this. Again, I said this a year ago, Robert. I don't like the whole Western civilization fetishism. I really don't like trad fetishization. So,
yes, about trad fetishization, like. What are you talking about specifically? Are you talking about the nuclear family or monogamy?
No. I'm talking about fat kids in college who are fucking like 22 years old, and they masturbate to like Plato and Socrates and Aristotle, and they start circle jerking with their other autistic apolitical friends. And they also, like, you know, you go in this English major study class. They can't talk about Black Lives Matter, so they talk about like Percy Shelley and John Stuart Mill and Byron, all this gay role-playing shit that happened like years ago. Like this stuff, it's LARPy as hell. And it's an excuse. It's a sweppel excuse. It's just like white people who say they're going to move to Canada because they don't like Donald Trump, right? I'm not talking about the nuclear family. That's a good thing. Those are good values to have. But there's this bizarre white trad fetishization going on in the alt-right where they connect to those things. And they assume that creates the psychosocial LARPing mentality, which is really.
So your point is it's psychosocial LARPing. There's a lot of them. They're spending a lot of their time indoors in the internet. They're not living that traditionalist utopia that they're fantasizing about.
It's just like that jerk we had on, Ryan Andrews, that little kid from Chicago, thinks he's so fucking cool for liking what, Western Civ. And he bashes on Asian women because, oh, they're not white and blonde. And it's just like, well, this kid doesn't know squat shit. He's just some weird nerd who basically thinks it's okay to like that because he has some fucking love for Bach or something like that. He never listened to fucking electronic music in his life. Like, that's what I'm talking about. And that's what's a part of these, like, nerdy kids, you know? And so I think that's a little dangerous, you know. I was with this with a bar with a friend the other night. We were hanging out this restaurant in Philadelphia called Brew, and it's a German beer place. And the demographics, it's majority, you know, white Chad and Stacy. You know, it's pretty much like that. And I was talking to my friend. He said, you know, Richard Spencer and the white nationalists, this is what they want in every block. They're going to have ballroom dancing white guys and girls listening to rap music. That's what they were doing. They were ballroom dancing to rap music. Now, I guess they'd have to ballroom dance to what, Bach or something like that. I don't know. But the point is, they're not defining, like, the whole white nationalist thing is, yeah, they want neighborhoods to be white in like 1950s white America. But does it have to be white normie shit? Like, this is the reason why there was, like, 60s, 70s countercultures, because they were tired of the same fucking white shit that happened at, like, these normal, like, they weren't like, Fluxus movement, or they weren't, like, situationist, and that's why the left was winning, because they were for avant-garde arts, you know?
Yeah, a big part of what you're advocating with the left is about kind of queer avant-garde culture. I mean, it could go back to what Brandon Adamson talks about in his admiration for the beatniks and beatnik fascism, but also a lot of these artists, ranging from Death in June, Boyd Rice, even Juju.
Exactly. Exactly right. And I want to associate with those people. And I think, Robert, your show should be in the tradition of that queer fashion, as we have to get not only musicians, but people who work in like political spheres that are weird. We got to get people from pornographers to convicted pedophiles and murderers, anything. But the point is, it's not shock art, but it's this ideal of the classic liberal ideal of every possible thought must come through your head. And some of these crazy liberals think that it's so justified to have a gay black liberal professor, right? With and it's supposedly a doctorate, and that they're doing this because they think it's a moral transhumanist thing. But that's wrong again, because it's a disgusting value. People should be mature and adults and understand and have values which are not, you know, we're, again, it's not for decadence or nihilism or this typical trashy thing. It should be for values which are good. And I think that's the problem with today's left, is that it's a queer fest. It's a progressive stack of queer fest. Philadelphia, the refused fascism rally I was at, and basically what they do is they have the progressive purple-haired black Mexican man woman speak first. And just says that.
Oh, yeah, the progressive stack. I mean, that actually goes back to Occupy Wall Street.
It's not contribution. That's just a queer contest. I'm queerer than thou.
Yeah, it's idiotic.
Now, let me tell you something. That's invading in the alt-right, and it's very fucking disgusting. It's very fucking disgusting in the alt-right. And I think people like Emily Yukis and Mark Reedon, you know, illegal Aryan, they're fucking shit up. And I'm just putting this as a fucking, like, we're after you, is because they're only in it because they want to be cool kids. They're part of the cool kids club, the KKK. They're basically these fucking normal white people. You think they think the Antifa's cool. They go to these gay ass punk house shows. They think they're so cool and they do all this stuff. And then they go ahead and flirt with white nationalism and do this thing, the same thing. And that's a part of the disease right now of the alt-right, is letting these progressive stack hipster people in. Because they ruin everything. It's a whore show. It's a whore show. They say they're radicals. They're not. They're just doing it because of cool factors. And I think
they're both consumers on the plantation. You know, they're just fishing for likes and whatnot, whether they're on Antifa side or the alt-right, you know?
Exactly. And I think these people have zero value. And they think we're the weirdos. They think we're the queers. All right. I just want to tell you that, Robert. You can't even talk to these people because they don't even care about us. They only care about their own selfish desires. But not about these people. But the point is how to fix about this, how to do about this is we don't want to fall under this whole we want to keep it avant-garde, but we don't want it to be a shit show of who's cooler than now. We want to make it interesting and having a centric and a good environment. And, you know,
it's not a free for all in an egalitarian sense, like all ideas, all culture is equal, but just have it all out there, no matter how controversial it is. And then let the kind of, but in a sense it is like that, but it's not cultural egalitarianism.
Again, I think people like Jim Goad and Adam Parfrey and Richard Wollstonecraft, they do a great job because they're always hating.
Well, I think Richard Wollstonecraft, he goes around calling himself alt-right, but I think he's more out left.
Yeah.
Because he has that background from the Hellfire Club. But on economics, he's kind of a socialist. So I think Richard is Wollstonecraft is out left.
I think he does a good job at, dealing with these people and making sure, I'm saying the tides always turn, you know. I'm surprised that, Jim Goad would be invited to American Renaissance back in 2010, 2011. He had a speech called The Wrong Side of History, and I think they replaced him with Richard Spencer. But for one point in time, American Renaissance invited him, and they don't know about Answer Me and about, you know, his whole – we just had a podcast about this, about how offensive – I don't think anybody on the alt-right would agree on the whole – amazing literature that is Answer Me, right? That's what we need. We need to make everything like Answer Me.
I mean, Jim Goad is on All Right Podcast to talk about the new church ladies, but they will not touch Answer Me because it has like serial killers and Peter Sotos.
Exactly. And we have to be like that. And you know, Jim Goad's new thing, you know, he has his podcast, Group Hug, and he's doing a good job. You know, he'll be on the alt-right. I mean, he's a skeptical guy. I mean, I don't want to speak for him, but he's going to be a skeptical. You know, he might even be skeptical of the alt-right. And we're skeptical, and I'm skeptical of the alt-right. And so that's important, healthy value, because this is about creating artistic things, and as well as people understanding their own mistakes, right? And so, again, I think the alt-left is against the Frankfurt New Left school of thinking. You know, these idiots like Zizek and Derrida and Foucault and Althusser and Deleuze and any of these kooky postmodern, you know, philosophers that are talented in their, like, pseudoscience creative writing that's passed as academic stuff. And these Marxist professors think it's genius. Like, they've never heard of it before. You know, it's not like they're learning Newton's law. They're learning about Toni Morrison black Greek philosophy. That it just needs to be destroyed quickly.
What do you think of the gay element within white nationalism?
I think it's very progressive and nice social justice thing. I mean it to say that it's a good thing. It's a very important thing. And I think there needs to be a more open form for being both being pride to be gay and homosexual and being nationalist. Because I think a lot of people on Identity Europa and websites on the internet are gay white nationalists. And I have a couple of gay white nationalist friends, but they don't want to admit it because some of the philosophies include that, well, if we support on our gay side, then people are just going to call us names like we're sodomites and no one will want to listen to the lesson, our lesson, you know? And some of them are like, well, we want to uphold values, which are, you know, normal. We don't want to uphold values that are gay. And so we want to do that. Therefore, we can have our gay stuff happen. I mean, if you go on Wikipedia, the only thing they call what gay white nationalism is homo nationalism. And I think homo nationalism is legitimate. And for some time, I really liked Milo when he was doing his thing, because this was the only gay guy talking about Trump and selling rainbow t-shirts, like a rainbow Uzi that says "We fight back." When that Orlando shooting happened at that gay nightclub, because I really thought there would be a cultural movement of right-wing gays happening. And I think there is. It's pretty fucking cool to be a right-wing gay. But the thing is, again, the alt-right is becoming paused and normie. And I do think right-wing, there needs to be an open form of right-wing gays to call out, you know, right-wing normies. Because real white nationalism is like what, Robert, you're talking about with Lassie Nielsen. It's blonde, muscular men hanging out with other men. You don't need women. It's also a MGTOW thing, too. Women are biologically different and have their own different things going. If two men just want to be feminine and, like, want to hug and be happy and be girly, then go ahead. It's a nice, cute thing. It's just that you got to consent to that. You know, there's no chem sex in that. That's what left-wing gays have to offer, chem sex and being paused. Gay white nationalists are basically strong men.
Like, with gay white nationalists, are you going to have standard fuck parties and bug chasing? Or is that more of like a left homo thing?
Well, here's the thing. We're talking about the trad or the decadent. It's the trad versus Chad, you could say it. Trad is more like they're stoic and they're introverted and they wear their glasses and read their books and act like girls and they go to dates. You know, we're talking about the trad life. But then there's these, like, trad guys that have, like, stupid thought blondes and have their standard fuck parties and do what they want. And I know some gays like that. Now, of course, we could be talking about homosexuality and how it's basically just an excuse to have promiscuous gay sex and all this other things, and an excuse for pedophilia if you want to be more radical. But, again, there must be moderation, and we all know gay people can't have children. There's just no way. A sperm going in the butt doesn't produce a kid. But men who are like that, you know, they're pretty tame, the smart gay guys, and some of them want to do decadent stuff. Well, go ahead, that's sexuality. But the point is, gay white nationalists should have this kind of gay bond together, whether it means a standard fuck party or emotionally rating to one another, or this whole, but they should be treated as a family. not this, like, I know, and it's really weird when there's the whole daddy thing, too. I think that's really weird, by the way, having, like, a 20- or 30-year-old guy, and he's like, no, that's like having sex with your dad. That's like incest. But the point is, I think it's okay to have, like, a bunch of gay white nationalists in the room talking about things and talking what's right for this and that, because pretty much white nationalism produces men like them. And again, I think gay white nationalism should be voluntary, so it's really beneficial for bi people, so they can be gay for a while, and then they go with their Stacy and have kids. But again, I understand it's decadence, I understand it's, and that's one thing gay white nationalism has to get in control of, it's decadence, and there could be different sides of the thing, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of these things are kind of the alt-left, as the left-wing, as you said, the alt-left, in a sense, the left-wing of the alt-right, is kind of these people who, I would say people like myself and Brandon Adamson and you, I guess to a degree from what you're saying, people who were pretty much politically homeless most of their lives. Like, I flirted with the libertarian scene and the paleoconservative scene, and I guess you have people who are politically homeless because they don't fit in with the left or the right or libertarians or kind of mainstream and triangulate, kind of meet your mainstream centrist types. So they see the alt-right as a view, as just this kind of a Big Ten view, and they're kind of loosely affiliated with it. And I think those people are really what the alt-left is all about. I mean, I don't even like to use the word left, because the word left is too tainted. You could even say it's like an alt-center, in a sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, I'm a little bit nervous about centrists, because the centrist means the autistic white kids who masturbate over history classes and Western Civ. I'm a little nervous about centrist thing. If there was a centrist institution that could go above that, that's fine. Maybe I just hate young kids. Maybe I just hate teenagers and 20-year-old millennials. Maybe I just hate young kids in general. But the point is, that's a part of the problem. And young people, as much as they're a fetishization, the baby boomer generation of implanting the young, I think a lot of these young kids are being groomed. Right, they're being groomed into something they think is bigger, because their life, if they don't have no direction in their life, and they're not old enough, they don't have the wisdom to make truths yet. And I can say a lot about young people, but as a young person, you really can't say if you're an adult. You role play as an adult. You try to act like you're God, but you're gonna laugh at yourself in 10 years when you see that, you know. And you got to make sure. It's again, young people are used as these kind of weapons. And I think that's very, again, this catcher in the rye mentality of their innocence being taken away in favor of whatever.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to the whole kind of beatniks versus the hippies. The beatniks were people who were they were people who kind of rejected mainstream normie 1950s society, and they went off and did their own thing, and they were much more culturally innovative. Because they were free thinkers, and the hippies came along, and it was this mass movement that was more... I mean, I'm not going into the whole kind of conspiracy theory angle, but it was influenced by the Frankfurt School. But I think the main issue is it was just a mass movement, so you just kind of got the masses of society. They produced more innovation because they were this small group of people that arose organically, rejecting the mainstream values of society.
I mean, I always considered myself an artist. I always wanted to be a cartoonist when I was young. And, as I grow up, I always change different and learn about the world and shall we shed my skin. But right now, I'm an Asian. I consider myself, in my own words, an Asian Aryan. Now, I understand the word Asian Aryan is a little convoluted and can mean many things. It could shock somebody. Oh, what's Aryanism? That sounds bad. But in my own world, I like to use the word Asian Aryan, and I like that word to describe myself, an Asian Aryan, because it really likes the things I like, you know. I like art, and I do like, you know, I like that old alt-right scene, and I like Asian culture, and I like Asian studies, and I'm just going to paint a pity picture, and I'm going to make Asian Aryanism. And I'm also very sincere about Asian Aryanism, too, because I think there are other kids exactly like me who are Asian Aryans, but they're too pussy to even say they are Asian Aryan, right?
Remember that.
I can talk about my own definitions, right? I've been saying this, that there's a new version of a cuck, which basically means somebody's with their Asian girlfriend, and even deny saying they're with their Asian girlfriend and think their Eurasian children are individuals of the future, when they're pretty much just Asian Aryans. They don't want to bring it up. And I think it's amazing that boards like R9K on 4chan make up stuff like toasties or normies or green techs, like these new words that like that's in, it's like it's it solves a lot of things. Like, even the word counter signaling, right? That's a new thing people like to say. Everybody, oh, I'm going to counter signal or I'm going to trigger. Like those are new words in our vocabulary.
We were talking about Asianarianism and how there was this kind of aristocratic aesthetic that you see in the manga Kaze no Kino Uta, and there's a more queer aesthetic of a Padaliro. Would you say the same applies to the alt-left?
Absolutely. I think, you know, for the alt-left aesthetic, I think Brandon Adamson does an amazing job with it. I think he's a genius.
The whole, the whole 60s mod.
Absolutely genius. I think Brandon Adamson's got to release his book soon. He's got to take all his articles and go on Lulu or Crate Space and get his book out. And it's cool. It's super cool when you go on altleft.com because you wish you were in Logan's Run or this, like, white. Hey, even the white girls look like they're Asian girls with white skin and blonde hair. I fucking love it. And, like, that's what I wish white America was, too. But it's kind of long gone. And if people get in their own aesthetics, you know, that's a new word people say, aesthetics, whatever that come from, vaporwave or stuff like that. But that's something we're obsessed with that. We like that. And we tend to think about that. But I have to mention, if we're talking about aristocratic Asianarianism, there's this anime my one friend told me about. It's called the Legend of the Galactic Heroes. I don't know. It's one of those.
Oh, I think you told me about it. The one about the fascist theme.
Yeah. And they're basically, my friend showed it to me. It's called The Legend of the Galactic Heroes. It takes place in the future with Japanese German people, and they're all Eurasian. And I was like, oh my God, it sounds like Asianarians.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And in a science fiction way, and there's a lot you can take from that. But I guess that's some form of Asianarian
aristocracy. Oh, and what's interesting is it has aspects of the aristocratic European aesthetic, but it's also a little bit cyberpunk. It's, it looks
exactly
pretty cool.
Now that's its own I like Kaze T. Nukita and Patalio. I love Patalio the most because I find that really queer and really nice with my personality. But some people like Galactic Heroes, and if they want to think Asianarians that way, then go ahead. You know, I'm not the sole judge on that matter, but I think it's a really good thing because people strive to something like that, and people actually role play as those characters. But let me tell you something. Asianarianism happens a lot in American cartoons, I think so. And what's, you know, evading today, it's in the last 10 years, you know, we could say a lot of white people love Adventure Time. It's their cartoon, right? We could say that. But again, there's whatever you want to say about Port Welton's art or whoever, about Adventure Time. We could say that today's comic books and arts, that's American cartoons, are pretty much, they can't be white in racial consciousness, but they can be Asian. But on articles, like when I upload, like my Sten Supremacy article, that's a cartoon called Kitty Bobo. And I think Kitty Bobo is a cult Asianarian cartoon that's only 8 minutes long. It's a future it could have been, but it's not. What exactly happened was in 2001, Cartoon Network had a bunch of pilots. One of those pilots was Kitty Bobo, about this an Asian guy who's basically living in the city, kind of like, you know, hipster shows like Mission Hill. And him and his Asian friends go out, and he's talking about a cell phone. It's really corny. But the point of the matter is it's very aesthetic, like the art of Tim Biscup. And the actors in it, Lila Lee, she's in it. She did Angry Little Asian Girls. She's Maggie. And the guy, Dante, I forget his name, Filipino comedian. It's all Asian. Megan Dunn. Megan Dunn is the Korean-American Jew who made the cartoon show. And her art's amazing, and I just wish this show would have been made and within 2001 and today. I think we would have had a more generation of Asianarians if Kitty Bobo was real. But stuff like that is American Asianarian cartoons, the thing I'm trying to say. And that predates Adventure Time, right? But again, I make sure that when I upload articles on Asianarianism.com, I make sure I get these very lowbrow, highbrow cartoons of Asian influence. I mean, again, like it's Secret Freemasonry. There's one music video by The Knife. We Share Our Mother's Health. Nakamura, who's a very well known Japanese lowbrow artist. He's, you know, you can see his art in Kid Robots. I mean, Siona Hong, And I did in the Asian Feminist Fallacy. Stuff like My Life as a Teenage Robot. You know, I love the American tradition of these Asian-influenced cartoons. You know, I've been a huge fan of Samurai Jack. I mean,
what about the Japanese cartoons that are influenced by the European artist?
I mean,
going back to Kaze Tsukino Uta.
Exactly. Or we could talk about Panty and Garter Belt or Stockings, or I remember that show 10 years ago. I mean, we could talk about some animes influenced by American cartoons, and definitely there are unique, very animes, and we have to be on the lookout for that. And I can name a lot of them, which are very interesting.
What do you think about Sam Hyde?
I think Sam Hyde's really funny. I met him 2 years ago. No, a year ago, actually. And I saw him in Philadelphia, and he turned everyone to a gay Muslim. And this was before world peace, actually. This was before world peace. And so he showed all these unaired episodes of world peace, and he even showed like uncut stuff they couldn't even use. And it was amazing. And meeting him with Sam, Charles, and Nick, it's a very funny thing. I got a selfie with them that I constantly use. And, you know, Sam Hyde's been talking about me. He's got two videos up. One about his UPS video about his invention of Asian blowjob houses and talking about how Asian girls give blowjobs, which I think he stole directly from me. And he's talking about Charlottesville, how all he's doing at Charlottesville is getting back massaged by Asian girls, and everyone in the alt-right should do that. He even said my work is the yellow pill, low, low, low. And we've been in an email contacts back and through. I really think Sam Hyde's looking at my stuff right now. And he's already dropped my name and my Asian influences in four videos. He's a content stealer, a meme stealer, and I like that. I just wish he drops my name soon.
What do you think about the artist Trevor Brown?
I love Trevor Brown. Again, I wish Trevor Brown was on the podcast, but he's a little shy about doing his thing. And he's on Twitter, and I would love them to have him on. But I respect his privacy, and I'm not so sure if there ever was a voice recording of Trevor Brown. I know Colin Liddell met Trevor Brown, and unfortunately, Colin Liddell said he was degenerate. But I don't think that. I think he's a kind person. I think he's a sensitive person. I mean, he's got a Japanese wife. So people like Trevor Brown are cool as shit. And I hope he's listening to this program right now and your stuff. We need people like him on our on the alt-left side. So
kind of back to this whole alt-left theme. Pilliter, what are your thoughts on Greg Johnson's West Coast white nationalism essay, which he wrote about 5 years ago?
Well, that article is getting old, and I would like for Greg's opinions to be updated on the leftist theme and on how this white Swipple thing is.
I'll read what he wrote. It's basically that kind of a Swipple idea, but in a kind of a majority, like a majority European society, but with all those kind of stuff that Swipple's like walkable communities, organic groceries.
Exactly.
Ethnic food, Asian food.
Again, that's what I was saying previously. We have this divide of this, like, Chad culture versus hip culture. You can have that in the white ethnicity, and that's fine. And I think that's a nice thing to do. And as for non-whites doing it, I think, you know, they say there's the Afro thing and the Asian thing. Yeah, just let bicultural people do their own thing in those little pockets. But, yeah, there can be all of that, and I don't think there's nothing wrong with that whole Swipple thing. But again, I would recommend Christian Lander's book, Stuff White People Like, and Whiter Shades of Pale, as I find those books the most informative on the matter. But the ideal of the Swippleness, right? I just said Kitty Bobo Show, right? And I recommend everybody watch that show, the Kitty Bobo Show by Megan Dunn. That is a Swipple show before Adventure Time or Mission Hill on an Asian Aryan scale. We could be talking about the alt-left aesthetics of Brandon Adamson and or Greg Johnson's West Coast white nationalism. But everybody has to know that Asian Aryanism advocates an Asian Aryan art aesthetic-wise. And that is very important. And wherever you go to any metrosexual cities, you will find the common waffle, white male, Asian female, and Asian male, white female, at their artsy little electronic avant-garde shows and their anime and their video conventions, whatever. That's a thing. It's an issue, and it's growing. And I don't know whether, I have to say this again, nerd conventions, vegan restaurants, punk rock shows, art galleries, whatever, it's there. And people, the art like Tim Biskup, and aesthetics like that, is really powerful. And again, as long as people show that image and show that aesthetic, you can get the message across, because there's certainly an untapped audience that's not listening. You know, SWEPL people, it's there, but they associate and discriminate because they know it's there. They just don't want to be aware, because if you point the elephant in the room, everybody gets mad at you.
Is Linkin Park Asian-Aryan?
Sure, why not? I think Mike Shinoda. When Chester died, I was a little nervous because I thought Mike died, but that wasn't true. Chester died instead, and I don't know if he whether committed suicide, was he voted for Trump, but yeah, Linkin Park has done its great job of Asian-Aryan aesthetics. But I previously said this before, that the people who are into this, you know, a part of that's dangerous is irony, right? We have too many ironic people in the alt-right that are basically not sincere. They're just doing it to for their own narcissism and their own fame, right? And yeah, we got to weed those people out. And of course, the thing we have to do for these Asian-Aryan types that don't want to open up, we got to make up words and definitions and slang, and we got to yellow pill them so they become awake, because that's a part of authenticity. Now, of course, some people say that's impossible because you simply can't, you know, people, you can't think about breathing, but we're reaching a tipping point where that's becoming real and numbers are becoming larger, and people have to have words and definitions, because if there's none of that, then there's no meaning and people can't explain it. It's a metapolitical ground out there. And again, I would like to see Asian-Aryanism grow to have its own yellow block of an Asian-Aryan equivalent Antifa, not exactly Antifa, maybe call it yellow block, that looks out for the interest of Asian-Aryans, whatever you want to call it, the Yellow Panthers or something like that. I don't know. But there should be at least a group for that. I mean, there are all these, I mean, it sounds so sinister, dumb, but I think there needs to be Asian-Aryan Chads and Asian-Aryan virgins and Asian-Aryan normal guys of all different levels. And that is an important thing. And again, whether you want to call it Asian-Aryan or Euro-Asian or some more politically correct term in the future, I think it's there, and it needs, and it's just all about culture institutions. And you can, it's soon enough to mean that smart people know who they associate. I mean, again, Koreans know they're Korean, and I don't think Koreans are going to let, any people into their extreme Korean culture anytime soon. And the same goes with Eurasians and Asian-Aryans, Asian-Americans, and whites who go with Asians and Asian go. It's a bicultural thing, and there has to be an institution now.
That's an interesting comment you made, because I feel like ultimately a lot of the races we do, you know, just separate naturally without even these definitions of alt-right and alt-left, but form their own communities. Even absolutely. In college, I see that.
Yeah, they're forming it in college. I've seen it too in college, and everyone's in their own little Discord server. Nobody's a part of their one community, and everybody's deracinated and evil. And I think that's a perfect way. If you're in college right now, you have a lot of dumb early 20-year-olds that need that. They're being groomed by strangers, and that's a perfect time to get people on our side on different things. And it's also, and they know this too. The staff knows this. They're used car salesmen in disguise. I think college is a fucking disgusting place, because they're these kids who spend their trust fund monies, and they basically being used, and you know, they exploit them. And I hope college it destroys, and we destroy a majority of college institutions, and there's only a few of them left. And I think. It's easy to exploit people, but at the same time, there are lots of scenes happening and lots of things. It's just all about culture, institutions, and who survives. And we're very interesting in an era that where postmodernism is finally dead, and maybe modernism as school is dead. And it's a new age that will go back maybe to the roots of Martin Heidegger and stuff like that, and more of a peaceful Asian culture. And I hope that happens, and we could get rid of a lot of the cultural Marxist enemy.
Yeah, well, men have been dropping out of college ever since I was going to college. Like, the trend already started back then. I graduated in 2010, and most of my friends that I knew from college, especially, like, the cool kids, like, at the community college, none of them went on to a four-year school. It's because, like, the college environment is so anti-male right now, especially anti-white male. It's like, why would anybody want anything to do with that? It's like you can't have like frat parties like you used to back in the early 2000s because of like all this crazy sexual harassment training. And I'm not like endorsing frat parties or any of the stuff that goes on there, but like, come on, you have your own responsibility as an adult not to get drunk at a frat party. What do you think is going to happen if you're like a hot 20-year-old girl, if you get drunk at a frat party? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, it's interesting you point. Absolutely. I mean, people like Christopher Robertson, or CRISPR, you know, he writes for Countercurrents. He's 26. He's getting married. He drives trucks. He didn't go to college. I mean, Countercurrents has an extremely good balance on the whole college educational system. And again, I think only alphas have these fraternal parties that happen in secrecy. And those people are living life because they're the true alphas that have all the money in the world. And after Roger Devlin's right, those are the people that are at fun. And all the other beta males got to suffer as consumerisms. And it's good. It's good not to go to college now because you're better off working a job and doing manly shit somewhere else, because they're certainly not teaching you if you're in a DMV hall. I mean, I went to four different institutions. 5 years of my life I spent in college. But the point is, it's pretty obvious it's becoming a consumer institution, and basically that the college institution is no different from the corporations that sell you MacBooks.
That point is even the same for STEM in your STEM article.
Exactly. And you have to understand, too, that, again, the psychosocial narrative, Eric Erickson, whatever you want to call it, I could tune in some really dope Japanese philosophy about this matter, but we're creating convoluted, crazy people, and the colleges are creating the Antifa. They're creating the convoluted left. And, again, there has to be – if we're going to make college better again, we got to eliminate all the shitty colleges and make frat parties. We got to have the normal manly shit happen. We got to make sure there's – I mean, I'm saying this is sounding dooming.
I would have to disagree there. I think like college should be a meritocracy.
We should have
a meritocratic system. We shouldn't let any dumbass who has rich parents just go to college and spend like 4 years of his or her life partying, getting drunk, and like having sex with 50 different people. You know,
absolutely. Yeah. Like, I was just being like, cynical.
Yeah,
there, so.
I know, but. Like, because I was talking to Toth Zolt, who's my friend on Facebook. He's a Hungarian nationalist, and he says that in college, like, only the smart people go to college because it's so meritocratic in Hungary. Like, there's none of that, like, stupid shit that goes on in American colleges, or at least...
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, at least...
I have to agree with you 100%. That's absolutely right. I'm just being cynical and saying that, well... We're dooming this right now. It seems like the only thing. It's just a brothel right now, and we should treat it as a brothel. I mean, it sounds very dooming, but again, I would like it to be that it's only Ivy Leagues in our nation, but it turns out to be just.
What I wanted to ask you, I like the whole free association. My like biggest issue with the whole alt-right at this point, Pill, is the Just the idea that they're going to go back in time and have some like white society. Like I think we can tolerate other people and be a multicultural society and still have free association.
Exactly, it's the trads. I mean, Brandon Adamson has said this before: the trads are the problems, and it's these again. It's these young kids who are not adults yet; they're not 30, and they really believe they can switch back time. And they're usually historian majors. Pretty much. I surveyed a bunch of like 19, 18, and 20-year-old kids who are basically at these events. And they're all history majors, right? Because they're so obsessed with history, they think they're going to be a part of this narrative. That they're being so... Exactly. It's this LARPy thing. We have to treat the alt-right as an anime convention. Because that's what it is, an anime convention for these white kids who live out and some of these kids are... You're right, they have a trust fund, they have all this money, they go to Cornell and they do all this stuff. And again, these kids, I mean, wait to one more criticism here, but people like Matthew Heimbach, you know, they're doing a good job because they're actually touching the white middle class and all these, you want to call them the white dredges, because these identitarian whites who go to colleges like that Peter kid, that gay Peter kid that talks as he's scared because like his picture's all over the place. He doesn't give a shit about whites under him. He just wants his whole identitarianism thing, right? I think, and of all the white nationals, and I think what Matthew Heinbach is a traditional liberal, and he's doing a good and a Christian job at these things, and you're looking at, and there, I get the whole trad thing. I understand it's a little perverted, and there might be some of that perverted nature in there. But again, I'm against it because it seems to be this whole not thought out, disgusting time traveling thing that again refuses to look at beatnik or hippies or any avant-garde culture. They just put their fingers in their ear when they listen to electronic music. We just have to fucking kill them with some digital hardcore music, and that's my matter on it.
We are at the end of the show. I would like to thank Pilliter for being on. It's been an excellent show.
Thank you for having me on.